At Prairie Gardens, our custom framing experts see the big picture and give it the perfect frame. Photos, keepsakes, art, you name it, we can frame it. Surrounding what you love with the best moldings and matte combinations around at the right price. Whether it's for you or a gift for another, we'll create a frame as special as the memory that's in it. Prairie Gardens Custom Framing. Frame the moments that matter. Springfield and Duncan, Champaign.
Good morning. I'm Tamara McDaniel, and this is Plant Experts Live at Prairie Gardens. Thanks for joining us this morning. You can either stop by the store. We're at 3000 West Springfield in Champaign at the corner of Springfield and Duncan, where the coffee is nice and hot and fresh. Or you can phone in at 356-9397. You can even text your questions or comments to us at 351-5357. We have our plant experts standing by, including Mary Ann Metz.
Good morning, Tamara.
Good morning, Mary Ann. And good morning, Steve Brown.
Hi, Tamara. How are you?
I'm doing well, thanks.
Did you go out and sniff those pansies or primrose or anything this morning?
Oh, the primrose are beautiful. It
Aren't
was
they
the ranunculus that
are oh, a ranunculus fan.
Wow.
Love them.
Yep. What color
God,
are you drawn
so
to the most?
Any? It's hard to say because you love them with each other.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
The orange.
You love them with each other. I like that.
Thank you.
Yeah. It's
like
that
I don't want
all-inclusive thing.
It is. I don't want just the red, even though the red is great. It's a very strong red, bold
rich,
red. Yes.
Lush.
But the red orange.
Yeah.
Also, or orange also goes so well with it. And the bright yellow.
Yellow.
Purple.
So
yes.
Listeners might gather that we perhaps have some pansies, primrose,
fresh
ranunculus, and
flowers.
A few spring planters, early season planters, in stock and ready to go out there on the patio.
They are so cool. The first shipment is always the best.
Yeah.
It just warms your heart. I'm sorry, it just
it
does.
It does. I agree with you completely.
And then a sunny morning. It doesn't get any better than that. Flowers and sun.
Yeah.
Yes, we have a beautiful weekend, sunny,
yep,
and right around 50 this
yeah
weekend.
You know, and you never know what the temperatures are going to be, certainly over the next 6 or 8 weeks. But certainly we have right now, these things would do well if they were planted in a container or something like that.
Yep.
Especially if you had the luxury of bringing that container in the garage if it did go south.
Yeah.
But if it's a heavier, larger ceramic pot.
Put a sheet over it?
Yeah, you could tent it. I would keep anything up and off of it. But temperatures that we're going to have now for, say high 20s in the evening and 40s, 30s, 40s, 50s during the day, they're going to thrive outside.
Really? Oh, yeah.
And so it's only when it starts to get down into the low 20s or the teens, then they're getting spanked quite a bit.
Yep. Okay.
We call them cool weather plants. Isn't that awesome?
It is, and I guess it just didn't register just how cool the cool weather plants can go down to.
All right. See, there you are.
Yeah.
So learn something every day.
Those are available now. And then
yes.
Marianne was putting out some beautiful oxalis or shamrocks for St.
Oh
Patrick's
Day. Oh, my gosh.
Day.
Look at these.
I love that.
Aren't these fabulous?
Those are beautiful.
I'm sure everybody can see them.
I love the variety.
Yeah, we have all three. The green one and the purple one.
Well, and the green and purple one.
And the green and purple one, yeah. Yeah, all three.
Well, what a neat little gift.
Aren't those awesome?
Especially and those can last for years.
Oh, my gosh, that's
really
an understatement. Yeah, I remember getting some of these. I actually ordered them from a mail order nursery because I couldn't find them anywhere. Some of the purple oxalis,
okay,
which I just love. Isn't that color just incredible?
Yes.
And I put them in a mixed container. And, you know, I always reuse my soil. I put fresh in and take some of the old out. But the little, they're called pips that they grow from, that each stem grows from. So they're all this little cluster of little what they call pips in the ground. And somehow it started getting distributed throughout my...
Somehow.
Uh-huh. I don't know how.
Yeah. Who's responsible for this?
I just put all my soil on a big tarp and just kind of refresh it with new soil and fertilizer and stuff. So
nice.
So it just got mixed all through. And I have these coming up. That was probably 15 years ago. And it's still coming up in places I didn't
really
know. Yeah.
That's
it's fun.
Kind of a nice little problem.
Yeah, kind
have
of serendipitous. Yeah.
It is.
Well,
you had them a couple of weeks ago at the fairy garden level.
Yeah, yeah. Right.
And so I went ahead and got my oxalis. I had already gotten the green, and then you brought in the purple. Where when it was young, it's
uh-huh
green, and
uh-huh
then as it ages and grows, then it turns
cool
very, very
so your
deep
fairy
purple
started celebrating St. Patrick's Day ahead of the
early
rest of everybody.
Yeah,
right?
February 15th, the day after Valentine's Day.
Wow, get it out there, huh?
It's McDaniel.
So some people would just
right
enjoy these as a seasonal thing for St. Patrick's Day. Some people would enjoy it then as a house plant that they could keep inside the house. And then you want to give it a resting period in the winter, ideally, the late fall or winter, for 4 to 6 weeks. And the plant can kind of rejuvenate. It'll come back bigger and better and stronger than ever. Or you could do what Mary Ann did, and once the weather is nice enough outside, you know, you could treat it as a house plant in the meantime, but then move it outside and put it in a mixed combination planter for shade or a little morning sun.
A little morning sun, yeah. Doesn't hurt.
And it would just be a nice texture additive to that container, because you can't get that leaf shape with any other plant other than something that's in the oxalis family.
Isn't it just cool? I just love the shape of those leaves.
Yes.
They look like little wings.
Yeah, almost like butterflies.
Yeah, totally.
And then, but these green, they're more round if you want the more traditional clover look.
Yeah, but there's still that three-lobe thing.
Uh-huh.
Well,
the shamrock.
Maybe once in a while you'll find the four-leaf.
You could find that four-leaf clover.
Oh, really?
I've never, but...
My mom used to be really good at finding them.
Really?
Amazing. Yes. And then she had me. Go figure. She's full of good luck. While we're on combination planters, though, I love that you have some combination planters available out there that do have a ranunculus in there, a ranunculus, and some pansies. You have what else did you had some very light purplish flowers, almost wildflower
what
looking.
Were they?
There might be some angelonia or some violas. There's also some white alyssum in some of them.
Some alyssum.
And the alyssum smells really nice, too.
Oh, man, you just walk out in that hallway and it's just like, oh, it smells so nice. It's not dirt.
Yes, and there's color.
Yeah. Oh, my gosh, the color's fabulous.
Six. Oh, sorry.
We've got the pansies. We got them.
Yes, and then some. 356-9397, I was going to say. This is Plant Experts live at Prairie Gardens. So what do you think was the most frequently asked question this week?
Well, for me, it's still houseplants, and people are wondering about repotting and what to do with them. People are noticing that some of the older leaves on plants they've had for a while are starting to decline, you know, yellow and that. But that's normal, especially this time of year when they're starting to push out new growth. But, you know, we discussed a little bit last week, extended sun hours, thank heavens, they're beginning to wake up and start growing. So, you know, it's time to pay attention to them again. I told you last week I lose more this time of year than any other time because I forget to water them. I forget that they're using a little bit more.
I was very glad that you reminded me to water last week because, yes, houseplants, they're getting more sunshine. They're starting to use a little more energy.
And yeah, they are.
I forgot. It's we have to start watering them.
My next... Right up there with the houseplants was grass. Is it time to plant grass yet?
The soil is pretty wet, so that's what's going to keep you from doing it, not the temperatures.
The temps are right there, but the soil, it's pretty saturated still.
Yeah, I think depending upon what we get Monday, if it could be not heavy, maybe towards the end of next week, it might be dry enough in some areas. It just depends on how much sun and how much wind how well it drains. But in most areas, it's just too wet.
Wow.
When you can't crumble the soil, then it's really too wet to dig or prepare.
Okay. And you don't want to compact the soil by walking on it when it's wet. Just crunches it down, and then you'll have little globs of concrete.
Okay.
It's not good.
Yeah, that's excellent advice.
It kind of segues into our topic this week.
Oh, yes, it does.
We're going to be talking about soil preparation and raised bed gardening and stuff like that. So
it's all about the dirt.
It really is.
It's not dirt. It's soil,
Mary Ann. Oh, thank you. Thank you.
I think once you get a certain level of gardening expertise, you're entitled to call it dirt again.
Yeah.
Because it's an affectionate term.
Yeah, it is. Okay. It is a term of affection, yes.
Okay.
Definitely.
I believe that.
Even though it's not, but you can still call it that. So.
So what goes into soil preparation?
Patience. Yeah. Probably number one, making sure you don't jump the gun.
Yeah.
And again, you know, one of the biggest mistakes you could make in trying to prepare the soil would be doing it when it is too wet. We have a lot of clay in our soil. We think we have the best soil in the world, and for some crops we do, especially if we add extra drainage and get the water away and things like that. But it's critical that you don't do it when the soil's too wet for a couple reasons. One is just the foot traffic and the handling, you're going to compact it. The second is you start to dig it and you disrupt it, and those particles bind together, and to get them broken apart is almost impossible. And certainly to evenly distribute any organic matter that you want to incorporate into the soil is almost impossible if it's gummy. And so how do you decide if it's too wet or not? Well, if you could, first off, it probably is going to be, if you have any doubt in your mind. But secondly, I think I'd probably go out there and take a spade or a shovel and maybe dig up just a little bit, even if it's only an inch or two deep. And if I can take that soil and put it in my hand and work my hand back and forth like I'm making a fist, and if I can have it crumble and fall apart, it's probably workable. If it just gums together mm-hmm. and sticks together, it's just too darn wet. You're okay. going to do more damage, and there's no way you'd do any good at all. So, you know, there's some things that you can do to cheat, which I believe the two people at this table have done before. So if there's an area that you know you want to work and it's been wet, you see some more rains coming. So if I really wanted to do something, I might consider identifying the space, and then maybe Sunday evening before the rains come in Monday, maybe I'm out there covering that area with a tarp or plastic, visqueen, so I can have the rain that comes down disperse off of that space so it doesn't get any more wet. Rain's over Monday, I'm taking the tarp off. I get some drying action on Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday. Maybe by the end of the week I can plant. I don't know. But I'll be much closer than if I allow that one more rain to get on top of right. what's already a wet ground. So
I
you can
always
do
forget about the tarp advice. That's great
always have
advice.
A tarp in your potting shed.
Okay.
Obviously.
But it could make a huge difference when you start to magnify that over the course of the spring in terms of being able
oh,
to
sure.
get this done and get that done. Because
yeah,
it's so often more moisture related around here and too wet to do things than it is the temp. There's so many things that are seasonally appropriate with the cool temperatures, whether yeah. it's sowing grass seed or whether it's planting some of these early season annuals or whether it's sowing some spinach or some lettuce or planting some potatoes or all the stuff that you could possibly be doing here in early March, but it's often just too darn wet mm-hmm. to do it. So I think planning and patience is probably the first part of soil preparation.
And gardeners are so blessed with both of those things.
yeah.
I've met some planful ones, but I don't know if I've met any patient ones.
Yeah, that's very well said. Yes.
Very well said.
So when it comes to preparing the soil, I don't know how you feel about it, Marianne, as far as are you the more the merrier in terms of adding organic matter? Or do you like to have a certain percentage of whatever soil that's there that you're going to try and add to? How do you feel about?
I do not have a recipe. That's way too much like cooking, and I just don't do it. So
I like that.
Actually, compost is just the thing to add. You just got to do it. It's about feel to me. I dig it in and, you know, like you were talking about feeling the texture of it to see if it's too wet. The same thing with compost. Compost breaks up clayish soils really, really well. Peat is a good thing to add. Usually it's like a one-third of those three things, usually. Hmm. There are people that have, I know a person that has five or six ingredients to put into a bed, and I'm thinking, well, okay, I'm sure it works, but I'd forget, you know?
Interesting.
Yeah.
I kind of tell people it's probably more about how much money you're going to spend if you're going to purchase compost or bags of manure or peat moss or whatever it might be to add to the soil, and how much work you want to put into digging it in and how deep you want to dig and prepare the soil.
How deep did you used to dig?
Boy, that varies from project to project and what type of plant it is. I mean, at some point, you know, say if it's a vegetable bed, you can, except for the deepest portion of the root zone for some larger vegetables like tomatoes, right. you can probably amend almost the entire root zone if you want to put the work into it. You're probably going to have to do some hand digging besides some tilling to do that, but you can do that if you want to.
Yeah.
If you don't want to do that, but you want to get things off to a good start, even if you dig down 6 or 8 inches, mm-hmm. you know, the depth of a spade or a depth of a shovel would be certainly helpful if you're willing to go that route. And of course it would vary with what you're trying to grow. If I was trying to grow some shallow rooted things like lettuce, I wouldn't necessarily right. have to go as deep as if I was going with some deeper rooted plants. But so you with annual type plants, whether it's vegetables or whether it's annual flowers, you have the luxury of being able to continually year after year improve the quality of the soil if you want to add more.
Sure. Hmm.
And so you're not restricted to a one and done. And even with perennials, you're not really restricted to one and done.
For sure.
You can certainly get off to a good start. You can certainly top dress during the season, and that will break down and still benefit the soil. And then, you know, we all dig up perennials every 3 to 7 years, except for some things like peonies, which you kind of plant forever. So when you're doing things like that and dividing or separating, you have an opportunity to continue to improve the soil at that point in time, too.
And you know what? Soil prep is probably the most important thing you can do in a garden.
Really?
I always relate it to building a house. If the foundation isn't right, the rest of it isn't going to be right. So the soil is your foundation, and make it right.
Okay.
And you can continue to do it. I top dress with compost throughout the season, cow manure or mushroom compost. Always have a bag of that in your potting shed also, right next to your tarp.
Okay.
So, you know, top dressing.
I do have that.
Awesome.
Mushroom. I think it might
mushroom
have a little
compost.
Cow in it too, but manure.
Doesn't matter as long as it's composted.
Right.
Spit
compost.
It out there.
Right. Okay, compost obviously feeds it. What does peat moss do? Why would you add that to soil?
It opens it up, the soil. It's a little bit soil. It's a little bit moisture retentive. So if you have that dry space where things just don't seem to have enough water, it'll hold in a little bit, but it also breaks it up. It also deteriorates. So that's why organic material is really important, because it continues to deteriorate and add to the soil condition.
Right.
And so compost in a general sense is going to do a few things. It certainly will feed. In most cases, like you're talking about,
provide the
nutrients that you need. It's going to be a great home for all these microorganisms that want to live in the soil to flourish.
Yeah, mycorrhiza is the big spin word now. Mycorrhiza.
Yeah, you're adding that to this product.
Micro-rising?
Rhiza. It's a different. We'll talk about that another day.
Okay.
So you're doing that, and then you're just improving the overall drainage and tilth and workability of the soil by adding the composted material to it. And then peat moss adds some of those qualities to it, but not all of them. So peat moss is going to help improve the tilth or the workability of the soil when you add it to our soils here, if you mix it in thoroughly. But it's not going to have any fertilizer value to it.
Okay.
If you had a crop like blueberries or something else that you wanted to help really lower the pH of the soil because they need a more acidic soil, then peat moss might be a really good thing to choose.
Definitely.
To use as your dominant organic matter source. To add to the soil. So this can be compost that you have in your garden that you just generate from your leaf and your grass clippings and kitchen scraps and anything else that you could come across. Or it could be things that you purchase in the bag or things that you purchase in bulk. You have a lot of choices for what you're going to do. And even though some people have very specific recipes, some people wing it a little bit more, mm-hmm. I think you can get really good results with any of these choices, to be
absolutely
honest with you.
Steve, what do you feel about, as I just read something about adding this to your mix, potting soil?
I don't. And the reason I don't is I feel like, for the most part, I'm paying a premium for what I get volume-wise.
Mm-hmm.
Because I'm buying potting, I would buy a high-quality potting soil for a container in a heartbeat. You know, pots or containers and things like that, to work it into the ground, I think I can get better value by purchasing mushroom compost, manure, peat moss, buying bulk compost, anything like that, I think is a better use of my money in terms of getting volume than potting soil. That's my personal opinion.
Did you ever add sand to your beds?
I haven't done that in about 25 or 30 years.
Oh, so...
Okay.
Originally, way back when, I had done some of that. But
uh-huh.
then I think as you learn over time that unless you add such a large volume of sand, for the most part, you're going to cause more damage than you are good, because it's going to actually, the sand particles will bind with the clay particles and you end up having almost a brick-like,
concrete-ish.
Mixture here with all the clay that we have in the soil. So I wouldn't do that. If I was going to want to, again, prove the tilth and the drainage of the soil, then I'm going to stick back to the composted stuff. If I want to have even a little bit more coarse, if I had some rotten bark mulch or something like that had really decayed and declined, adding that to the soil is going to be great. But I would not add sand. If I was going to buy a substance for drainage that I felt like I had to do besides compost, it would probably be perlite and add that to the soil.
And maybe even vermiculite if perlite isn't available.
Yeah. The vermiculite might hold a little more moisture, but those are hard to work with in an outside environment because they blow.
They blow so much,
and they can get in your eyes then, so you certainly would be wearing goggles, and it might end up across your yard and not where you want it to be. And I'd rather have the more natural route of the compost, personally.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay, good to know. You're listening to Plant Experts live at Prairie Gardens here on DWS, and our number is 356-9397.
So, you know, when you're talking about soil preparation, pretend it's a tree or a shrub, and it's more localized, and say if it's a tree, and, oh, this tree someday is going to be 40 or 60 feet tall and 40 feet in diameter. You're probably not going to prepare the entire soil area where eventually those roots will grow out to and flourish, because the roots are going to go out beyond the branch radius and beyond the drip line of the tree. But what you're trying to do is prepare enough of the soil in the immediate area for the tree to plant to help get it established, if you will. And I think you just have to kind of take that into perspective, which is on the opposite extreme as if we were trying to do a smaller garden area where you might be able to amend the entire soil basically where all those smaller vegetable plants or herbs might grow in. So you got to kind of keep in mind what your purpose is. Are you just trying to get off to a good start? Or are you trying to undo the entire soil bed? That kind of thing.
Okay.
So raised bed gardening.
Yeah. I found it interesting before the show started that you made the comment that it's kind of like container gardening.
Well, I think of it that way because what you're trying to do is create an environment that's artificially beneficial to the plants. And, you know, what are the benefits from the plants? Well, you're typically going to have better drainage. The water is going to drain out faster, which means for you as the gardener, the benefit is it's probably going to be more workable sooner and easier.
Okay.
And because it is a looser, lighter soil mix, if you will, typically the roots would prosper and flourish and grow in that media better in a raised bed if it was done properly than it would be if it was just planted in the ground. Typically, you get earlier season warm-up, so the soil might be a little bit warmer faster earlier. So if you want to kind of cheat a little bit on a few things, you might be a few degrees warmer, and hence you might get quicker germination or quicker establishment. Some authors say that it retains heat longer later. I don't understand that, but to me, if it heats up quicker, it probably dissipates
quicker.
Right. Thicker, which would be my logic. But anyway, some people think that. But there's other components to it besides the plants maybe growing faster or easier because the soil is more workable, whatever. It's easier than to plant. So if you're planting annuals or planting vegetables that you're doing every year, you could probably, if it's really well prepared, you can do it with a spoon or you could do it with your fingers as far as digging. And I mean, the soil is so easy to work.
Yeah.
It's ridiculous.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
If you're trying to sow seeds or something like that where you don't want big clumps and clusters, it's easier to get that furrow dug a half inch deep or a quarter inch deep or whatever you need to be able to plant the seeds as opposed to being it coarse and clumpy and things like that. And then weeding is typically much easier because the weeds just pop right out in a well-prepared bed, especially a raised bed that you've built up over time.
Or they grow really well.
Sure.
And they grow really well. And that's where you come back in with a mulch
out.
Or some other material on top to keep those weeds at bay. But there's a whole lot of advantages to it. And I think, again, it kind of goes back to the scale of what you're doing, the cost of what you're trying to bite off. Some people like to go ahead and put a perimeter that retains the soil and helps you build it up in height. And that would be most common if you Google search raised bed gardening. You're typically going to see suggestions for using wood or masonry block or a myriad of things to try and contain this bed shape and hold the soil, allow you to build it up, whether it's 6 inches or 12 inches or 30 inches tall or whatever it might possibly be.
And then you have to bear in mind that it's always going to settle every year. So you're always replenishing, which is actually a good thing. You can work in more organic material and that kind of thing. The first raised beds I ever made were not contained. They were just mounded. And, you know, I just refurbished that every year. It wasn't difficult. You know, if you put enough material down, whether it's straw or shredded bark or something, that'll retain it somewhat.
Wow, no kidding.
Yeah.
I didn't know that you could have a raised garden, though, without some kind of a retainer wall.
That's what I do in my vegetable garden.
Is it?
Yeah.
Okay.
And I do it for a couple of reasons. One is I'm going to be adding every year.
Yeah.
To it. I don't raise it up all that much, so I might crown up maybe 6 to 8 to 10 inches at the most. Do I have a little bit of wash off and rounding? Sure. So is it not as structured as it could be? Yeah. But the main reason I do it is because each of the beds might be 5 feet wide and 60 or 80 feet long. Mm. And I don't want to spend the money on the materials to contain it.
Sure.
Because if you have 8 of those, mm-hmm. and then how high are you going to go? Mm-hmm. And if I'm only going to go 6 or 8 inches anyway, I can do it without having some sidewalls, if you will. If I was going to go 12 or 15 inches, then all of a sudden I'm going to spend so much money on the retaining material, I'm going to have less money to buy plants and organic material.
We can't have that.
The soil. So for a whole lot of reasons, I would rather not. That doesn't mean that's right for anybody. You might be in a situation where you don't have the luxury and you need it to be a little bit more pristine or structured or whatever. And maybe you need to go ahead and use some retaining material to build that raised bed. Or, hey, I really want to build it up 18 inches because the soil is just so terrible.
Yeah.
I need to build it up higher. Well, if you're going to build it up more than 6 or 8 or 10 inches, you really are going to have to probably have some sort of retaining material around there. And you can use different things. The most commonly seen and probably accessible is wood of some sort. Mm-hmm. You'll read all kinds of different things about pressure treated wood being food safe or not food safe, or and so you
Good
again do your own
about.
Research, make your own decisions about that. And if you don't want to take a chance, then you can go with a non-treated wood of any sort, cedar and redwood are more expensive, but they are the proverbial natural woods that would hold up to moisture well and ground contact well, and you're going to get 10 to 15 years probably out of something like that before it starts to rot too much.
Wouldn't teak be pretty?
Teak would be pretty.
Isn't that like $12 a foot?
Or something like that.
Or more.
My husband and I were just talking about teak the other day. That's funny. Sure, teak would be great.
Yeah, real funny.
Especially
uh-huh.
if you're buying.
I just looking at different articles and things, you see people who put so much money into raised beds, and there's absolutely nothing wrong with that. But I the method that Steve and I have used in the past, just mounding them up, is so effective too. So there's no wrong way to do it.
Good. I'm glad to hear that.
But I've seen masonry ones where somebody really laid some nice brick and, made it permanent. And yeah. They're just, the sky's the limit.
Yeah.
Fun and stuff.
I bet. Especially if you have a brick home.
It becomes, at some point, it becomes an accessible garden. When you can't, when you're not physically capable of doing the bending over and touching your toes,
that
kind of thing.
I keep thinking it's just sounds like it would be easier on my back and my knees.
Yeah, well, there's that,
If you can survive the installation process.
Yeah, exactly. Well, or you just write a check and have it done.
But, there you go.
There's a point where it becomes that, but which is really neat too. So, it doesn't, there's always a way to garden, there's always a way around it. And then if you don't want to go to all that expense or trouble, just buy some pots. Like we were saying earlier,
yeah.
it's the essence of raised bed gardening.
That's great.
Gardening in a container.
So. Okay. Well, and that's nice because now that I've conquered gardening in pots and containers, I'm not quite as intimidated then.
Yay.
For tackling a raised garden
bed. Yeah. I've heard people say that they do the raised bed thing, they have it contained, and they use plastic over it early in the season, like if they're able to, they get out there in January and cover their bed or cover it in the fall so it's covered all winter long so that it is more dry and it heats up even faster, especially if it's black plastic.
That's interesting. Good to know.
So they're out there in February. I've heard you do that before. Being out in February, you've put lettuce out.
But that's more of a covering up temporarily to keep the moisture out.
Sure.
Yeah. There's probably some people who've been very successful covering up with black plastic for months like that, I suppose. But to me, you're working against nature in a lot of ways at that point in time, I think. And I think some of the microorganisms that want to live in that soil probably are saying, what's going on?
You can't do this to me.
and so you're probably going to have some die-off, I would guess. And so I probably would only do it temporarily to keep some moisture out of my way so I could prepare and do it. And there's a lot to be read, to be said about not disturbing the soil any more than you have to. So once you've prepared it, or some people say don't really prepare it, don't turn it over, because the bacteria that live at maybe a half inch deep aren't the ones that are living down there 3 or 6 inches deep. And so they kind of get themselves established in their soil, and they do their thing as far as helping break down the organic matter and doing all the things that they can do to make that soil better so the plants prosper more. And by turning it up and tilling it over, you're constantly, year after year, you're just disrupting it every year. And so they never really get established. And so I kind of go, once you get it really well prepared, I top dress it, maybe spade or fork some stuff in. But as far as flipping it over or just running the tiller through it all the time, wouldn't be my first choice, but sometimes you have to run the tiller through maybe just to help get the weeds up or to do this or do that. I mean, there could be different reasons that you have to do it, I suppose. And again, I don't know if there's any 100% rules that you have to follow. I think you can be successful with this or that choice or this choice still.
Yeah, you know, one of the advantages of having raised beds is that usually they're not very wide, so you don't have to walk into the bed. So you're not compressing soil, and it's a more healthy situation all the way around.
Okay, that does
soil.
Make sense.
Yeah, you're really staying on the path,
you
will. So anything that's compacted with your feet or a wheelbarrow is that space that you've left between the beds.
And we're all about staying on the path.
All right, let's stay on the path. This is Plant Experts Live at Prairie Gardens, 356-9397. Let's go to the phones where Mike is standing by. Good morning, Mike.
Good morning. How are you guys this morning?
We're good, doing Mike. Well, thanks.
Yeah, this is Mike Beal. Hey, if you're interested, I have some information with regard to safety, a couple of products you've been talking about this morning, specifically that pressure-treated wood when you're talking about the raised beds.
Yeah.
As you were mentioning, in the past, that wood used to have copper and arsenic and some other, you know, potentially toxic metals in it for insecticidal properties. Because of concerns about what you're talking about leaching into, you know, potentially vegetables that may be in a garden that's bounded by and animals even sometimes consuming it, if it's relatively newly manufactured pressure-treated wood, all those metals have been removed. They're no longer there. So it's relatively safe compared to the old pressure-treated wood we used to worry about.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah, that is.
That's nice to know.
That's good news.
Yeah, I think it's one of those.
And not to hurt your sales, but I encourage everybody to buy the shamrocks and everything like that. They're great plants and stuff. But that's one of those plants that can really be a problem with pets if they get into it. So your customers need to make sure they put those up high or somewhere where animals aren't going to get into them, because they have the soluble oxalates in them just like rhubarb leaves.
Yeah, yeah.
So if an animal consumes that, it could be a problem. But it's just one you need to be cautious about.
Awesome. Well,
I'll put it by my rhubarb and put the caution tape around it.
There you go.
There you go. Make your rhubarb pie with it or whatever. Anyway, okay.
Yeah, and back to the pressure-treated lumber. And if anybody does any research, you're going to find out exactly what Mike said. I think you still have to just decide for you what's the right choice. Mm-hmm. Am I comfortable with the new information that says these changes without the copper and arsenic metals in it, that it's still okay around my food sources?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Or am I not comfortable with it still? And if in doubt, just go with the natural stuff. Go with the cedar, go with the redwood, go with something masonry, if you will, go with something metal perhaps.
Or not at all. Mike, Mike, do you know what chemicals they use in treated wood now?
No, I don't know that offhand. I just know some of those toxic metals. They used to have problems with, they would throw these, like, burned pieces of wood and stuff into pastures, and then cattle and horses would consume them and cause some significant problems, like in dumps of people, you know, having pastures and stuff. Yeah. So basically, I mean, I'm sure there's something there. It's probably more of an organic insecticide or something, but I don't know offhand. I don't want to claim I do, so.
Okay.
Yeah, everybody's just a Google search away from finding out what they're treated with.
Totally. There you go.
Yeah. But again, make your own choice. And this is a personal choice. I still wouldn't use the treated wood. But that's me.
Mike, those are great tips, though. I really appreciate you calling in.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah, just FYI. Thank you.
Thanks.
Yeah, thank you. All right. So
on the other hand, if you're like into that arsenic and old lace thing, you know, if you're like wanting to get rid of somebody in your family.
Yeah, let's get the creosote like, and the penetrate out, too. Yeah.
Okay, yeah. Let's go back to the phone lines where Linda's standing by. Good morning, Linda.
Good morning.
Well, good morning. Thanks for calling in.
Thank you. I have a bed that has that we prepared very deeply, and I planted hosta, and now it's about 3-4 years later, and it has sunk down, and I need to raise the hosta. How do I do that?
Well, yeah, anytime you have a raised bed, like I think we mentioned this, it is going to settle over time, and you need
I'm sorry. It wasn't a raised bed.
I see.
We dug down, and my husband put in all kinds of organic stuff.
Yay!
Except now, I haven't added every year, like you said, but now my hosta are like 3 inches below.
Oh, they're settling. Gotcha.
Yeah.
They're settling down into the soil. You know, I guess digging deeply could be a problem. I think that's a wonderful problem to have, though. Linda, I think you can easily just kind of dig out the hosta clump, and just disturbing as few roots as possible, but that's not always possible. And then just kind of fill in the bottom of that hole with some of your really good soil and just place the hosta back in and tamp it in. And, you know, you can almost do that any time of the year. Watch for soil or moisture in the soil because you don't want to compact it. But I wouldn't do it now. But I'm sorry.
I don't have to worry about redoing the whole bed.
Oh gosh, no. But if you plant something else in it, you might want to plant just a little bit higher because things are going to continue to settle. Yeah.
Well, sounds like you're going to have to add some more organic matter just to lift it up.
Yeah.
And especially if you divide the hosta when you dig them. And you don't have to divide the hosta when you dig them, but you're already doing part of it, so it's tempting if you need to thin them out a little bit or you want to space them out in another part of the garden to go ahead and do that. So sounds to me like you need to have a pile of compost ready to go when you're ready to start the project.
Like Mary Ann says,
just pick your battles as far as the moisture. And, you know, Mary Ann and I have both dug hostas when most people would think you shouldn't. And that could be in the dog days of the summer. And you're thinking, how can I dig this plant and disturb it and chop it and split it and whatever? But you can if you're around to water and take care of them. And to kill them would be tough. Now, that doesn't mean they're not going to look bad for the rest of that season, perhaps, or not bad necessarily, but like you really disturb them. That's a possibility if you divide them in the middle of the summer. But up through September, October.
Yeah. September, certainly.
Wow.
So, okay. Go for it. Just as long as you're not too wet. The soil isn't too wet.
Okay. I will keep checking that out then.
Awesome.
Thank you.
Okay, great. You're welcome. 356-9397. This is Plant Experts live at Prairie Gardens. And we have Tom standing by. So let's talk to Tom real quick. Good morning, Tom.
Good morning. I called you guys about a year ago when I did the rose. I put it in the ground from off another rose, and I germinated it and cut it. I don't know if you guys remember me calling you. You told me to call back.
Yeah.
It worked.
Yay! Cool.
It did not cover, did not put straw or anything on it. It came back, and matter of fact, last spring, my granddaughter and I dug it up, and we moved it to another location in the yard, and the other day I went out there and it's got a little green shoot coming off of it right now.
Yay!
Fantastic.
I love it when a plan comes together.
How cool is that?
Awesome, Tom.
Yeah. Also, on your raised garden, I cheat. I don't do anything. I don't spend money. I'm a cheater.
Give us tips then.
Nothing.
I got a lot of bricks. People just free bricks, free lawn stuff.
Yep.
And you can take that and make your raised beds out of it. I did that for my granddaughter. She's now going to be 5. I made her own garden with, cinder blocks.
Yeah.
They're just paving bricks that people said, hey, come and get these. I don't need them anymore. They're left over or whatever. and just made a cute little raised garden for her. And I just took potting soil and put it in between the bricks. And matter of fact, the cinder bricks, she plants her marigolds in there and stuff. So.
Oh, that's awesome.
In the holes?
That's incredible.
That's great.
The other thing you can do also, I've done this, hay bales. I put hay bales out, and I just put the potting soil, and then the hay bales deteriorate, so that's more mulch for me.
Right.
And you just plant everything in there. I don't like bending over. I'm 6'5", so it's easy for me to just go down that then and pick the peas and the beans and everything up off the about 4 foot up off the ground. So it's a lot easier for us old people who can't get down anymore.
And you got a nice bench, or you can lay out there and take a nap on that baby.
Seriously. There
you go. That works real good. The dog likes to get up there and lay down on it, too. So.
All right.
It's a fun activity for everybody.
Are you using hay or straw for those, Tom?
I use either or. I don't care, because what I do at the end of the season, because I'm raising my garden up like you guys are talking, I knock it all down, and then I do it again the next year.
Awesome.
I'm in an area where it used to flood. I've done this enough years. I've been where I'm at for about 28 years. My garden's up now. It doesn't flood anymore.
Oh, that's that's cool. Incredible.
So you must have easy access to straw and hay then.
I know a lot of farmers. I know a lot of farmers.
There you go.
That's great.
That's fabulous.
You can get a bale of straw for about $3 or $4.
Yep.
So it's not too bad. But that's a couple ideas I had for raised beds, and I gave you that there, you know, my rose. I'm going to do it again this year with a yellow rose. So we'll see.
Oh, fabulous. Good luck. Let us know.
Yeah,
thank
let
you.
Us
for
know.
For sure.
You guys have a great day. You got a great program.
You
thanks,
too.
Tom. Thanks, Tom. You too. Have a great day.
Oh, that's awesome.
356-9397, Plant Experts Live at Prairie Gardens.
Yeah, that's another whole concept in gardening, what Tom was doing with the straw bales or hay bales, planting in them, not using them as a retaining wall, but planting in the straw bales. So, there's more than one way to do it.
That is very interesting.
And again, that's what half of gardening's about, is just trying something new and something fun and different and increasing your knowledge. And
absolutely.
It's another fun experience.
Yes, it is. And creating straw or raised beds. You know, I've read about people doing it in old used tires, you know, just piling them up and then piling into that. I'm not sure I'd use old tires, but you know, it's an option. Recycle anything, you know? There's lots of things out there that could
reduce
soil.
Reuse, recycle. I love that.
Yeah.
Let's go back to the phone lines and see if we have just enough time to fit in Rich. Rich, we're coming up on the end of the program. Do you have a quick question?
Yeah, I got a grapevine about 20 years old, never been trimmed. When's the right time to trim it, and how far back do I trim?
Wow, 20 years.
I would go to the U of I Extension online and Google University of Illinois pruning small fruits, pruning grapes, and get some great information right then and there.
Rich, just having never pruned, never pruning a grape in 20 years, it might do more harm than good. I'm not sure. That's what I don't know about. But usually grapevines are pruned in the fall, and they're pruned pretty radically. But to do it for the first time in that long of a period of time, I'm not sure what the approach would be.
I think you're going to be okay this spring to do it, but I would go online because you're going to want to cut it back, partly dependent upon how you have them trained and supported. And you're going to get a total different experience in terms of fruit production.
Oh, for sure. It's going to just change everything.
You're going to really be blessed with a lot of fruit. But it'd be worth you taking 5 or 10 minutes. Hopefully you know what variety of grape it is. And deciding what kind of support mechanism you have and see what matches up well. But I think now is going to be great timing for you to get it done.
All right. Thanks for calling in, Rich. And thanks to everybody for your phone calls. This has been Plant Experts Live at Prairie Gardens with Plant Experts Mary Ann Metz and Steve Brown. I'm Tamara McDaniel. Our executive producer is Jim Lewis. Stay tuned for Saturday Sports Talk up next here on News Talk 1400 WDWS Champaign-Urbana. And remember, a podcast of the show will be made available later today at WDWS.com. Have a wonderful weekend.
To anyone else, it's a ticket stub. To you, it's first row seats at the last concert of your favorite band. And the blind date with a funny smile who became your best friend for life. At Prairie Gardens, we see the big picture, and we give it the perfect frame. Hand-selected, custom cut, and ready in as little as 3 days. Prairie Gardens Custom Framing. Frame the moments that matter.